Welcome to Right Damn It with me, Zoe Richards, your host for the podcast that's all about books, writing them, reading them, and getting our heads around getting the writing done. Episode 95, and in the next of the rejection series, we're going to talk about comparisonitis and envy, because let's face it, it exists. And, you know, I do think that we have to be careful denying that it exists. I believe every one of us, even if it's just the slightest inkling of envy, we all experience it, and we definitely all experience the comparisonitis, that whole thing of comparing ourselves to others. And it's not necessarily helpful to us. I find that there are people who talk about not being good enough. There's people who talk about being good but not being lucky enough. There's people talking about not understanding. And, you know, I've got something I want to say to you in that connection. And that is that there will always be people who are further along than you are on their journey. And maybe that is what you crave. But it doesn't mean there's no space for you. There will always be people who are better than you are at writing. And, you know, that could be for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's simply the way that their brain works. I remember when I was doing my degree, I had a friend, Jo Smith, and she had a phenomenal brain. She came out with the first class. I came out with the 2-1. We were both as clever as each other, but she had the advantage over me in that her brain worked in a different way to mine. So there will always be people who are better than you for whatever reason. And it doesn't mean there's no space for you. And then there's always the people who you can't understand how things are happening for them. And why not you? Why is that person getting this success and you're not? Well, nobody knows. It's the truth about that. And still, it doesn't mean there's no space for you. Thinking that there's not enough space for everyone is a lack mentality. It's a mentality or a mindset of being impoverished, of there not being enough of something. And you know, there are still plenty of publishers out there with plenty of commissioning editors who are looking for their next book that they want to represent. There are plenty of agents out there who are looking for the next author that they want to represent. So there are always spaces for other people. And, you know, there is that thinking around, well, if not now, when? If not you, who? So I think we do need to do some thinking around any lack mentality we have. So if you are finding that you're thinking that there's other people who are having a better chance than you are, maybe it is coming from that perspective of a lack mentality. So what does comparisonitis actually do for us? Well, it can make us feel disillusioned. It can create a self-limiting life. So we determine for ourselves that that's it. That's the limit of what we can achieve. If you are in that self-limiting mentality, it's worth reading Jonathan Livingston Seagull if you want a quick, easy book to read. It's written by Richard Bach. It's a very old book now. Crikey, it must be more than 40 years old. Maybe it's 50 years old. It's a fabulous book, and it's the book that started my journey to thinking differently for myself. So you could read that, or you could read The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, G-A-Y-E, and Hendricks as in the gin, not as in Jimmy. And so, yeah, those are two books that you can read to help you think about where you are being self-limiting, because comparisonitis does that for us. It creates limits for us, even though we might not consciously be aware of that. You can equally, when you're doing comparisonitis, lose hours scrolling on social media, looking for those people who are moaning about not having success, or looking for those people who you're then going to moan about. Now, I would say, by the way, if you are finding yourself tempted to moan on social media about other people's successes, don't be that writer. That's it, full stop. Don't be that writer. Don't moan, don't complain, don't have a go at publishers, don't have a go at agents. Just don't be that person. It's just not worth it. It isn't going to help you. There's a potential that agents could see you having a moan about how agents work. There is a definite reality that by having that moan, you are confirming to yourself that you're right. Because you know what will happen the moment you do a moan on social media? There will be a pile-on from everyone else who also wants to have a moan and now feels the permission is there for them to have a moan. That feeds in to tell you you're right to feel this way. You are right to feel that life isn't fair. And so it's actually not going to do you any favours at all. So I would say might be worth you either avoiding social media when you feel like that, or it's just that filter of saying, nope, stop, delete what you were about to write. It's not worth doing it. There's also a risk when you are doing comparisonitis of becoming argumentative. And I do see this on social media, where people will do the pile on themselves. So they will argue with other writers. They will argue with other published authors. They may argue. I've seen one thread where somebody was arguing with an agent about the way that agents work. I would say that that process of becoming argumentative, whilst it's a symptom of how we feel because of comparisonitis, it's a symptom that you need to quash. It's one that you need to set aside. It's not worth your while being seen as being the argumentative one on social media. And the other thing is that if you are stuck in comparisonitis, you are at risk of the blame game. And what I mean by that is that you are at risk of blaming other people for your lack of success. It's not your fault, it's how the system works. It's not your fault, it's that your favourite agent is close to submission. It's not your fault, it's that they aren't actually accepting novels like yours. But hey, look, I've looked at their list and they did in the past. And we blame other people because of comparisonitis. Now, again, this is one of those things where you might just do that in your head and then you'll be over it. But if you're on social media a lot, there is a danger that you will do that blame game on social media. So I guess what I'm saying when it comes to comparisonitis, it's really good to avoid social media or to restrict how you're using social media so that you don't fall foul of your own emotions. There are times our emotions can get the better of us. And when we're in that kind of state, it's actually better to avoid social media or to reduce the amount of time we spend on social media. So what can you do if you are experiencing this little green-eyed monster experiencing the envy, or you are doing the comparisonitis? Well, I have got some little actionable tips for you. Of course I have. It wouldn't be me doing one of these shorts on the podcast if I didn't have some little tips for you. So first of all, I would say if you are going to compare yourself and you know that you're at risk of comparing yourself, use it for motivation, not for bitterness. So yes, I've done that comparisonitis stuff. I've got caught out in doing the whole... There is a one particular author who I was on a course with her, and I was comparing myself to her. And yeah, at one point, I was going into a little bit of a downward spiral before it. I actually woke up to what was going on with myself. And then one day I said to myself, do you know, this isn't actually helping me, and it's not really having any effect on her at all. So let's actually turn this around. Let's reframe it. Yeah, she is further along on the journey than me. And actually, yeah, she is a better writer than me. So now let's use that for motivation. How can I become a better writer? How can I help myself to improve so that I can not necessarily catch up with her, but so that I can follow in her footsteps? And that motivation of seeing where she was at helped me immensely. So if you are in danger of comparing yourself with others, then use it for motivation, not for bitterness. Start by comparing yourself to your own progress. When I look back at The Seamstress, which is the historical novel that so far hasn't seen the light of day, and I'm starting to get excited with some ideas about how I can make it see the light of day, but that one, I read back and it's an embarrassment. How I felt okay sending that out to agents, I don't know. When I compare that writing to how I write today, I'm actually shocked at how much I've improved. Now, another thing that I've noticed as well, so you may have heard on some of the episodes where I've talked about having to shelve book 2 version 1.0, and I'm working on book 2 version 2.0. And what I've noticed is that my first draft of version 2.0 is far better than my first draft of Garden of Her Heart. It's a little bit better than that first draft that I worked up, which was 74,000 words, of book 2 version 1.0. What that's telling me is, with each time I'm writing, I'm getting better, I'm improving. So that comparison process can help us if we view it as being comparing where we were at, so in my case, 4 years ago, to where we are at now today. That is beneficial because it shows us the progress that we've made. Then there's something about looking at those who are way ahead of us. I think we're in danger when we're doing comparison of comparing ourselves with those people who are 100% ahead of us. That's not the best ones to compare ourselves with. It's like when we compare our writing with a finished novel. A finished novel is one that not only has gone through the writer's edits, but they've also gone through the agent's edits, and then they've gone through the editor's, the publisher's edits as well. So, and these are not just once around edits. You know, Garden of Her Heart, I think I did about 7 rounds of edits for myself. Then I did, I think it was 3 with Claire, my agent, and then we did structural edits and line edits with my editor for UCLAN Publishing. So how many is that? You'll have to count them up for me. Is that 11? 11 or 12 different forms of edits? Yeah, 12, isn't it? So if I've done 12 forms of edit, that tells you that's significantly further along than a first draft. So we need to be careful who we're comparing our writing with. And if we're comparing our writing with somebody who is published, and, you know, I read some people's novels and I think they're amazing writers. And then I've discovered, so Lisa Jewell, I absolutely love Lisa Jewell's writing. I discovered through an event I went to last week that she has written 22 and a half books. 22 and a half books. No wonder her writing is incredible. If you've not listened to None of This Is True, listened. Yes, I listened to that one on Audible and it's worth getting it on Audible. But the writing in None of This Is True is phenomenal. There's no point me comparing myself though with her, because I'm only just coming up to book number 1 being published and she has written and published 21 books. 22 by the end of this summer and 23 by the end of next summer. So, you know, that's something we need to keep in mind. It's far better for us to compare ourselves with people who are 1 to 5% better than we are. Neil Alexander, who's been on this podcast, he's somebody who I think writes beautifully. Now, he's published his debut novel, which has gone through all of those rounds of edits. And he's somebody who I would say is that probably 5 to 10% better than me. And I really enjoy that I've got somebody I can look at and I can read his work and think, okay, I can see some of his phraseology. I can see how he's writing that makes him better than me. Now, I'm not copying what he's doing, but by reading his novel, it helps me to look at how I can improve my own writing. Am I using turns of phrase that carry people along, or am I getting a bit stilted with how I'm doing it? So by doing that comparison with somebody who is further along than you, but not massively so, it helps. I was in the gym this morning, and when we do the Sweat 45 sessions, it does make me smile because I'm always, literally always, the oldest one in the class. So this is like a circuit training thing. And you generally, if there's enough people on it, you have to pair up. And obviously people look over at me and they go, we don't want to be with the old woman because I'm 62. There are people who have paired up with me before and they are always happy to pair up with me. And I was talking with the woman who paired up with me today and she said, I love being with you because we're better at different of these exercises. And she said, when you do the run one, you're far better than me, but that makes me push myself. And I was able to say back to her, well, yeah, I feel the same in terms of some of the ones where, like bungee jumps. Oh, I hate bungee jumps. And she's so much better than me. But it makes me think about how can I get better? So if you look for somebody who's just a little bit better than you, it pushes you rather than disillusions you. And I think that's the critical bit here when it comes to comparisonitis, that you want to be motivated. So I said before, compare yourself for motivation, not bitterness. So if you look at those who are 1 to 5% better, maybe 5 to 10% better, but no more than that, they will help to motivate you to be even better still. And you can also reframe your language around that. I'm not as good as them yet. And by having that growth mindset of using the word yet at your end of your sentence, it helps you to remember that you're aiming towards that. The next one is to celebrate the success of other writers. So, you know, if you sit there and you're getting irritated because they've just got an agent and I've been querying for longer than them, how come they got an agent so quickly? Well, that's not going to help you and it's not going to help them. It actually only hurts one person. Well, I was going to say it only hurts one person. It can hurt more, but it really definitely will hurt you. The reason I say it can hurt more, there have been some cases where authors have done things against other writers. You might have heard of the one where it was all on Goodreads, where somebody created a false profile and hurt the reviews of other authors by, with this false profile, going on and leaving really negative reviews about their writing. So it did hurt others, but ultimately it hurt her. So if you're doing things in terms of, even if it's just in your thinking, you are hurting you more than you're hurting anybody else. So the best thing to do is actually get out there and celebrate the successes of others. Don't be that author or that writer who is moaning about other people's successes. Congratulate them. I am so humbled by the people who have congratulated me along my journey and the support that they've given me. And I'm convinced that in part that's because I do celebrate the successes of others. I'm there cheering them on because, you know, anybody on social media that I know is my friend, even if I've never met them. So we have to be there for each other and support each other. Celebrate successes. I think then there's something about becoming intentional in how you use social media. I found it helpful with the author that I mentioned earlier on. I was getting triggered by seeing her successes. So for a short time, I actually muted her posts. I haven't got her muted anymore, but for a time it helped me not to see what was going on. So I celebrated her successes and then I muted her because I needed to have time where I wasn't seeing all of her posts that were all about this great news of things that were happening to her. I then was able to do the dealing with myself and getting over myself, and I was able to then unmute her and again get back to celebrating her successes. So sometimes you need to unfollow people or mute people just to help you yourself. And that's okay. That's about helping you deal with where you're at with those green-eyed monsters and with that comparisonitis that you're experiencing. I also think that it's really helpful to notice when you're triggered, because that might be something to do with lack of food, it could be lack of sleep, it could be when you've been really busy in work. And so that tells you that maybe they're bad times to go onto social media. So just notice those times when you do get triggered. And then I think something else that we do tend to forget is to celebrate our own progress. Celebrate your progress when you've finished your first draft. Celebrate your progress that you've finished your first run through of an edit. Celebrate your progress that you've found an absolutely beautiful paragraph and you can't believe that you wrote that paragraph. Celebrate every small thing for yourself. And then the final thing that you can do is to be aware where you're getting your validation from. I don't know if you've ever come across Myers-Briggs, but within Myers-Briggs, there's different personality types, effectively. And one of them, which is the one that I am, or one of the traits that I have, is where we are people who are absolutely fine not getting feedback from external sources because we're able to give it to ourselves. But what we do find is that if we're given feedback by other people, we have to respect that person in order to take that as being valid feedback. So I highly respect my agent. And as a result, if she gives me feedback, I know that I can respect that feedback. I don't always agree, but I do respect her feedback. Whereas there are other people, again, in this Myers-Briggs type indicator, who actually do need and seek external validation. So if you're not like me, if you can't give yourself that internal validation, or you can receive feedback from loads of people, and it doesn't matter whether you respect them or not, then you need to consider where you're getting that validation from. Where are you getting the feedback from? So that you can perhaps do a little bit of work around who you're listening to. Because if you've been told, and I'll use the obvious example, if you've been told by your mum that your writing is absolutely amazing, it may not be. And your mum might just be being really kind to you. The same with if it's your best mates. They might be being really kind to you. I also think that where people send out the full manuscript for beta reading without questions, it makes it very difficult for people to give you honest feedback. So if you've done that, if you've sent out your manuscript to beta readers and you haven't given them a series of questions and you've sent the whole manuscript to them, I'll give you a bet on this. I bet that they've given you nice but not necessarily usable feedback. So they'll have been kind to you, but they haven't said, I got a little bit confused in chapter 23. I wasn't sure who was speaking. Whose point of view was that? That way you can then use the feedback. But if you've given it to them as a blanket, here's my manuscript for you to have a beta read of for me, then they don't know what they're giving you feedback on. First of all, I would suggest you send out either the first three chapters or your first 3,000 words with a few questions. And then you say, if you feel like you want to read more, please ask for more. And that way, you're then able to get usable feedback. Now, if you've had this feedback from people that's been kind, but not necessarily useful, that means that you might be relying on a source of validation that isn't going to help you. So it might be that you actually haven't got a manuscript that is ready for querying and therefore can lead to rejections. So I do think it's critical. I feel like I'm ending on a negative here rather than a positive. I think I'm going to come back to one of my points that I said before so we can end on a positive, hey? But the point here being that you need to make sure you're getting your validation, your feedback from the right people, rather than hoping that you're going to get this validation from an agent when you're out in the querying trenches. Having said, I think I want to come back to something positive. The bit I'm going to emphasise as the positive is to celebrate your small wins. So your challenge for the next week is to think of something really positive about your writing journal. Journal? Journey. And from that, you can then put something onto social media that celebrates that positive from your writing journey. Maybe it is the fact that you've just woken up to a bit that you need to change in your manuscript, and now you've realised that you're really excited about the change you're going to make. Whatever it is, I want you to do some celebrating of a positive on social media some point over the next week, and tag me in it if you want, and that way then I can celebrate with you and share in your celebration. So there we go. Comparisonitis is going to be part of your journey. I'm not telling you not to be envious. I'm not telling you not to compare yourself, but I do think you need to follow these tips to help yourself with your comparisonitis so that it doesn't do you any harm. Okay, I shall leave you to it for now. Happy writing. I hope you're having happy querying, and may all the words flow for you at whatever point of your writing journey you're on. I'll see you on the next episode.